Welcome to episode 133 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro podcast, recorded live on July 5th, 2019. This is a show about Office 365 and Azure from the perspective of IT pros and end users, where we discuss a topic or recent news and how it relates to you. In today's episode, we come back from a post-4th of July extravaganza to talk about some tips and tricks for Azure Active Directory conditional access, a new jumpbox service from Microsoft for Azure-hosted virtual machines called Azure Bastion, and close out with some improvements coming to OneDrive consumer accounts with Personal Vault and OneDrive for Business with B2B Sync through the OneDrive synchronization client.
Hey, it's Ben here. Just a quick update. We needed to go in and make a correction to some things we said in episode 132 when we talked about business versus enterprise plans. So at the beginning of that episode, we incorrectly stated that you cannot add on Azure AD Premium or EMS to those Office 365 business plans. That was incorrect on our part. There is some functionality with some of the desktop versions that at one point in time was causing some issues when you combined EMS with business, but it looks like that's all been resolved. You can add on Azure AD Premium and EMS to those 365 business plans. The only real difference there is when you start talking about the Microsoft 365 plans, Microsoft 365 business is where it has some of the limited EMS functionality versus if you buy Microsoft 365 E3, it does include that full EMS suite. So again, wanted to go in, make that correction. We don't want to feed you guys wrong information. Our intention is never to feed wrong information. We try to keep it accurate. And if we do mess up, we want to admit it to you guys, make sure we can correct it. So thank you to those of us that, or those of you that called us out on this and said, hey, great episode, but you guys made some mistakes, had some incorrect statements. So again, thank you. Let us know if we ever do make anything that you find is incorrect. And yeah, sorry again. And there is that brief correction from that episode 132 on enterprise versus business. Opsgility is disrupting cloud training as we know it with their on-demand platform, SkillMeUp. Their new design focuses on a user flow to better support role-based learning paths with these great new features. Real-time, hands-on labs are now included with each subscription to build your skills competence. Hundreds of cloud courses with more added daily to transform your skills for today's cloud-first careers. Role-based learning paths guide you through associated level courses in an easy-to-view layout and tracker. Microsoft Azure and Microsoft 365 certification prep courses and labs to support you leading up to exam day. Learn more and start your free 3-day trial at www.skillmeup.com. So happy 5th of July, the morning after the night in which nobody sleeps because of the explosions.
I slept just fine.
Did you?
Yeah.
You have a quiet neighborhood, don't you? Do you have a bunch of crazies around you blowing stuff up till all hours of the night on the 4th of July?
We do, but it was fine.
Didn't keep you awake?
Nope. Came home, they were blowing stuff up. Eventually, they stopped.
Got it. Did you go out to the beach for fireworks?
We did. We went and spent the entire day on the beach. It was lovely.
Wonderful. My in-laws they do like a whole neighborhood parade, barbecue, all of that for the 4th of July here. So we went over there that morning, saw the parade through their neighborhood, and then had burgers and went swimming and then came back home and put all the kids down for naps because we knew it was going to be a late night. And they all fell asleep, amazingly enough. And then we went swimming again because it was unbearably hot here yesterday afternoon.
Yeah, it was a little warm yesterday.
Yeah.
That is a true statement.
We had a heat advisory in Florida, which I just figured Florida was always under a heat advisory, but no, apparently it can get hot enough in Florida that they need a heat advisory.
I don't know. They tried to move everyone off the beach yesterday to severe weather, which is always fun watching the crowd control kick in and the lifeguards who have no power trying to make people move.
Yeah. Did it work?
No.
Yeah, I didn't figure it did.
Not at all.
Yep. And then we went swimming again last night because it's warm enough. Our pool is like 87 degrees and it was like 95 degrees yet at 7 p.m. last night. So all of my kids were back in the pool last night waiting for the fireworks. And then we just did a bunch in our cul-de-sac driveway. I went to the store, bought some, and did our own fireworks show. So it was good. but everybody got to bed like an hour and a half, 2 hours past their normal bedtime. We'll see how today goes.
Today's a recovery day.
Absolutely. And then what else? Oh, I did finish up my flow session too. So we have another one of the Collab 365 virtual summits coming up that I was going to talk about for Microsoft Flow. And I'm actually doing a governing office 365 with flow session where I talk about a bunch of the connectors. And then some of the examples that I've done talked about before, where I actually walked through the example of using flow and Azure automation to provision some Office 365 resources, different ways you can kind of use flow to keep an eye on Office 365 or control creation. So if you want to learn that and a whole bunch of other flow stuff, I know John Liu is doing a session. We had him on the podcast a while back. So go sign up for the Flow Summit. I think it's actually going on the day this will get released, the day and the day after. I should look. I almost got caught again with that. So go check that out if you are interested in Flow, assuming you still have time to register or jump in. But we'll provide a link to that.
It looks like it's up. So if they go quick, possibly, you know, because like you said, they'll have the day. It'll be okay.
It's 2 days. So if you hear this and you're like, oh, shoot, I missed it. I think mine is like at the end of the day you're going to hear this. And then there's a whole second day, the day after this podcast comes out. And if you missed it, go buy an all-access pass and you can see replays of everything. So anyways, enough of our promotions and fireworks and 4th of July festivities. We figured today we would dive into some news topics that have been announced, released kind of in the June-ish timeframe. So let's dive into those. You have a few Azure ones in here. We have a few Office 365 ones in here. So we'll have some fun with the news.
Where do you want to start? You want to do some Azure stuff?
Sure. We can start with Azure. I've been talking a lot the last 3 episodes, which you enjoyed, but I am going to force you to do some talking now. So I'll let you start.
We'll see how this goes. I can probably force you to talk a little bit in this one.
Let's talk
a little bit about conditional access and something new that you and I learned with it. That makes total sense, but until you're thinking about it, you might not have been prompted to think this way. So the Azure AD team, they do these Q&As through the product managers and kind of program managers over there. So Alex Simmons and his team occasionally come out with these nice bits of questions, either that they run into in the field or that they see with customers or just kind of whatever it happens to be. So the latest one for this, with their latest Azure AD mailbag, was on conditional access. And, you know, it kind of starts at the beginning. Question one, what is conditional access? How does it work? Well, you know, it's this thing that does post-authentication evaluation of requests as they're coming in, and then we evaluate rules. And, you know, we do the if this, then that thing against those logins as they're coming through. If you're into conditional access, one of the things that you probably do start to target over time is doing conditional access policies that are based on device platforms, and maybe not just device platforms, but also device compliance. So I would not like you to be able to read your email in Windows or macOS unless you are on a hybrid joined device, or unless you're on an Azure AD joined device, right? I would like you to have a registered device, know your device is registered, know you're registered, and life's good, and everything comes together in the middle. Well, one of the ways that Microsoft does this is, and the way they can evaluate the platform, is by the user agents of the clients that are coming in. So if that is Outlook on Windows, you're going to have a user agent there. If it is Outlook on iOS, you're going to have another user agent on that side. If it is Safari on iOS, or if it is Chrome on Google, whatever it happens to be on Android, rather, you know, you'll see all these different user agents coming through. And then, of course, you can get third-party browsers, anything along the way. So the way Microsoft does that evaluation is based on a user agent. So, you know, we have these nice fixed strings that come along with our clients as they connect to these web endpoints, and you've authenticated. Now you need to pull some data out through an API and surface it back through that application. So that's all well and good. And if you think about something like iOS, like, cool, it's got a fixed user agent, and, you know, we're Safari on iOS, except maybe when you're not. Like, I use an application on mine for browsing PDFs and downloading PDFs called Documents by a company called Readle. And that one lets me go in and change my user agent manually. over to things like Chrome, or I can pretend I'm Safari on macOS or whatever it is. But there's definitely ways to kind of munch that and fake it. Or if you were a malicious application, you could certainly fake your user agent string as well. So usually what most of us do, and I'm certainly guilty of this because I'd never really thought about it, is we tend to think about a device platform policy that's applicable. Like we'll say, okay, I want to catch iOS and Android and have that come in. Well, what if somebody is actually on an iOS or Android device, but they're in an application that's sending a user agent string that Microsoft doesn't know about, or it's been, like I said, malformed in the middle or whatever it happens to be. Well, in that case, your policy doesn't apply, and now they're just let in, right? Because there wasn't anything around that specific grant to go ahead and say, you know, here we go. So a better way to do this, and the recommendation was, go ahead and create a policy that applies to any device. So there's kind of two options here. You can say any device, or you can select these specific platforms. You create one policy, which is for any device. And that's the one where you just straight up block things, right? We don't let it in because we don't want these unknown devices coming through. So what we do is we include any device, and then you exclude all the other platforms. You exclude Android, iOS, Windows Phone, Windows, and macOS. So that way, what you can do is go and create a second policy, which then does apply to those five platforms or three platforms, four, however many you want to target. And now what happens is you have a policy that catches anything that's an unknown user agent, and then you have a policy to catch your known user agents. And I just thought that was a great tip. Shouldn't even be in a Q&A. They should have a whole article about it someplace.
Yeah, this should definitely be in like the docs.microsoft. Maybe we should go edit docs.microsoft.com and include this in like a getting started, because I'm with you. This should be kind of a default. And I'm probably actually going to go back to some of my clients that we set this up on, because this concept didn't even click with me when I've set this up before, that maybe you have those user agents being spoofed and that you're relying on Microsoft to figure all that out. And yeah, being able to essentially say, I'm going to block everything by default. Nothing is going to get through. My Office 365 environment is completely locked down for any device. And then just excluding from that block the ones Microsoft knows about to let anything through that Microsoft knows about is a great tip. This also goes back to, though, one of our previous episodes where we were talking about conditional access and being careful. Make sure you do an exclude in there. Because if you do an outright block of any device, guess what happens if there's no exclusions?
So there's two things here. You can do an outright block of any device, but you're also, so we're talking about this specific grant based on device platform. There's still the part where we have to build the policy around the users or devices that policy is going to apply to. So now we're talking about those user exclusions, right?
Those users, yeah. Yes. But again, be careful, because this is a block of everything from any device. The Office. Yeah. I'm going to blame this on the fireworks. I must have gotten a concussion from one of them that blew up. No.
Well, at least you still have all your fingers.
I do. I saw something. We're just going to sprinkle in little 4th of July firework tidbits in here. Somebody sent me something the other day when I told him I was going to go buy fireworks. They said the best person to buy fireworks from is the guy that has an eye patch and three fingers.
Yes. Yeah. Sure, we'll go with that.
Yeah. Maybe buy them from him. Don't take safety tips from him.
That's the way to do it, yeah. Also, don't be that person who buys your fireworks, signs your waiver that says, I'm using it to scare the chickens away, and then go and light them off like 10 feet away from, you know, the big tent full of all the explosive stuff.
Yes, that would turn into, I will send you the link, that would turn into a situation like the one in South Carolina that I saw a news article to this morning, where a shipping container full of fireworks caught on fire. A shipping container of fireworks that catches on fire, one, puts on an excellent fireworks show, two, gets hot enough that it has the capability to melt the shipping containers, it appeared from the pictures.
Yeah, steel can melt. It's a funny thing.
Yes, and fireworks can get very hot.
Huh, who'd have thought?
Yes, but the fire department had problems putting it out because, I mean, who wants to get close to a shipping container full of explosives? You don't want to keep your distance when there's like bottle rockets and fireworks flying in any direction out of this shipping container and exploding.
Yeah.
Okay. And we diverge. Well, that was news. That was news in South Carolina. Not enough 365 or Azure land.
News and stuff. So just to bring it back real quick. So for this conditional access stuff, because you brought up things like, hey, let's make sure that you exclude a user account, which is all very good advice and certainly valid. Microsoft has a new white paper that they put together as well for Azure AD, which is all about implementing zero trust networks or taking a zero trust approach to identity, leveraging Azure Active Directory. So I'll go ahead and put a link to that in the notes as well, because it actually does have all that guidance in there about thinking about things like how you verify identity, how you might want to have some exclusions, how you think about managing devices, applications, all this kind of stuff along the way. So it's, you know, it's a couple pages. It's like 60 some odd pages, but it is a good read because it breaks down how to think about zero trust fireworks, how to think about identity as a firewall in the cloud, and then how to think about sane ways to implement some of these policies and pieces of functionality that are brought forward by Azure AD.
Sounds good. Some good bit of information and advice there around Azure AD and conditional access. As IT professionals in the cloud era, sometimes it feels like we don't speak the same language as the rest of the organization. So when stakeholders from finance or other departments start asking about a specific project or team's Azure costs, they don't always realize how much work is involved in obtaining that information, sifting through cluttered CSVs and a complex mess of metadata in order to manually create custom views and reports. It's a real headache. On top of helping you understand and reduce your organization's overall Azure spend, ShareGate Overcast lets you group resources into meaningful cost hubs and map them to real-world business scenarios. This way, you can track costs in the way that makes most sense with your corporate structure, whether it's by product, business unit, team, or otherwise. It's a flexible, intuitive, and business-friendly way of tracking Azure infrastructure costs, and it's only available in ShareGate Overcast. Find out more on ShareGate.com/ITPro.
So let's do a little bit more Azure security as well, since we're kind of on a roll with it.
Which one?
Well, yes. Well, there's always stuff to talk about. Let's go ahead and get into real quick Azure Bastion. Are you familiar with this one?
I am not. This is going to be you continuing to talk about Azure Bastion because cool. I'm not familiar with it. So inform me and our listeners, what is it?
So are you familiar with the concept of a Bastion host or a jump box?
Yes.
Cool.
Okay. See, so now everything's starting to click. You may call me technically incompetent for this, but I've never heard it called a Bastion host before. I've always heard the jump box, but I never actually knew the technical term for it was a Bastion host.
It's just a kind of common nomenclature that we use out there for jump boxes, but same kind of thing. So having something that you can get into first and then use that to access resources that sit behind it, particularly from an interacting with a virtual machine, or it could be a physical machine, whatever it is, just a thing that sits on the back end. So this might be something like a remote desktop gateway. Could be you have some kind of like proxy sitting in front of things and catching SSH connection, whatever it is, right? To go ahead and bring that stuff together. But typically what you have to do is you have to spin up a unit of compute yourself. So if we think about Azure and we say, okay, I'm going to have this secure, quote unquote, secure network that sits in the back, no public IPs on it, anything like that. How are you going to go ahead and get into those virtual machines, especially if you don't have hybrid connectivity or, you know, express route, say to say VPNs? Well, you need something that sits on the edge, has a public IP that you can jump into, and then from there, go ahead and jump to that backend resource.
Yep.
You know, it costs money to run virtual machines, right? Anytime we spin up this compute, CPU and RAM, they're our most expensive things, and IaaS tends to be the most expensive place that we can sit for compute. And do you really want to run a virtual machine all the time and have it open to the internet and doing its stuff? When you look at a lot of reference architectures, you know, we do have these things in here, but now Microsoft has a new service, which they're calling Azure Bastion. Think about it like it's an Azure jump box kind of thing. It's managed compute. So it is a PaaS service where you have the ability to come in and enable this service. It sits on your virtual network. So it consumes a subnet, kind of a managed service that sits in your VNet, consumes a subnet within it. And what you do is now you go into the Azure portal and just all through your web browser, just through like an HTML5 player, you can go ahead and connect to any backend resources on that VNet through the Bastion service and kind of the Bastion host that you're provided. So this service, just it's always sitting out there on the edge. You don't need to manage a virtual machine. You don't need to worry about GPOs. Because it's an Azure service, you can gate it with identity access with IAM or role-based access control. So it just kind of brings everything to the front for you. It's nice to be able to just go in and kind of next your way and then have this service where you can just go ahead and interact with your backend resources. Today, it's got some limitations. So it is all through a web browser, specifically through the Azure portal. So there's no using like a remote desktop gateway and maybe coming in with a remote desktop client or things like that yet. All that kind of stuff is on the roadmap. There's also some limitations around connectivity. Typically with like enterprise networks, we tend to do a lot of peering between VNets. So you'll see things like these hub spokes or hub spoke spoke, and you know, you'll have user defined routes and all sorts of other things going on in there.
Yep.
This service as it exists, it cannot cross VNets. Actually, I haven't played with that one, but it definitely can't cross VNet peers. So if you do have these two virtual networks that are tied, yes, we can't cross VNets. If you have these two networks that are tied together with a peer, the traffic from your Bastion host can't actually talk to things that are over and on another virtual network. But that's all kind of roadmap stuff too that's sitting out there right now. It's in a couple regions. It's in West US, East US, West Europe, South Central US, Australia East, and Japan East. So if you have resources there and you're interested in kind of kicking the tires on this one and seeing how it behaves and if it can help you get ahead, it might be a thing that you want to look at least playing around with. It is a preview service. So, you know, it's not a production kind of thing, not fit for use, all that good kind of stuff. But it is sitting out there and ready to go.
Got it. And because it can't do the whole VNet peering and it connects to subnets and all of that, you're not going to be able to use this. So like it's deployed to East US, you couldn't actually use this if all your VMs are in East US too, because there's no way to access those VMs from the service in a different...
Correct. Not today.
...region.
It is on the roadmap. From everything I've seen, everybody knows that that's an important consideration. Customers just do that kind of stuff and you need it. Even if you are in East US, like you don't want to have to spin up two Bastion hosts and pay for two units of compute, right? Having all that stuff kind of running around and doing what it needs to do.
Right.
There's some limitations there, but it is a... I believe like once it comes out and it's kind of like ready to go and they've worked out some of these kind of back-end kinks, it'll be a super turnkey service for a ton of customers.
Oh, yeah. I could see even just spinning this up. I have a bunch of VMs out there. I have, granted, mine, in that scenario where they're in a whole bunch of different regions and different subscriptions and different VNets and all of that. But the pricing of this to be able to not open up RDP over the internet, like right now, and I think I saw that while it's in preview, it's half off. And I don't know if these prices that are listed are the final price or if these are the 50% off prices. But for the first 5 gigabytes of data transfer, it's free. You definitely can't beat that, at least for the data transfer. Oh, I see the price above it, but it's 9.5 cents per hour that you're using it.
Yeah, which is way less than a virtual machine.
Yeah, it is.
Even turning on like a B or an A series something or other that's just going to sit out there on the side and be running all the time, it's pennies compared to dollars, which right. is good when you're looking to optimize. You need that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I just did some quick math. I mean, if you're running this 24/7, which you're not, let's face it, you're only going to probably be connected to it 8-ish, maybe 10 hours a day.
You're paying for it regardless of whether you're using it or not.
Okay, so this isn't connection time to the Bastion when you're using it. This is going to be 24 hours a day, 30 days a month, 9 cents. So it's like $70 a month for this service.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's not per user because, as you know, with VMs, you can only have so many users
right.
connected to them. This is going to be, you could have, it doesn't look like there's any limitation. You could have 100 people connected to the service using it. You could have 2 people using it. It appears like it scales pretty well, or will?
My understanding is it is, like I said, it's a unit of managed compute for you. So it's not like there's virtual machines that are sitting back there. I think it's something just like Azure App Service kind of like running in the background and, you know, you paying for that. So that's how they're handling some of the auto scale and the elasticity and other things that come with it.
Well, and let's face it too, data transfer, they may make a little bit there that they could apply to it, because the more users you have, the more data transfer you're going to have, which means you're going to have to start paying for some of that data transfer too, which they haven't figured out. They're not going to lose money.
You're already paying for network connectivity anyway. So the data transfer thing, I wouldn't get hung up on that, because you're doing the same thing even if you stand up a public VM.
VM, got it.
With a public IP on it. Plus, this one is, it's not about just running the VM. So you might be able to run, like I said, like an A series or a little B series VM for, say, $10 or $20 a month less. But you've got all the other resources that you need to manage with that VM. You need to manage the disks. You need to have a public IP. You're going to have to pay for that public IP.
Right.
There's all these other resources that come along with it.
You have your NSG to manage.
This is just a single service, single resource. Go ahead and apply your RBAC and boom, you're out the door. You don't need any special agents on your virtual machines. Nothing like that.
Very nice. I like it. Mover is a cloud migration company that specializes in moving your company's files from file servers or cloud storage like Box, Dropbox, and Google into Office 365. Their patented technology makes Mover the fastest OneDrive file migrator in the world. Moving dozens of terabytes of data a day is a breeze. Use Mover's free, industry-leading migration guides or ask for a managed migration and they'll take the lead. With Mover, all your data is secure and intact. Running completely behind the scenes, you don't lose time, money, or hair while you transfer. Scan, plan, migrate, report. Migrations that don't suck with Mover. Visit mover.io for more info. All right, so I have a OneDrive one that I saw this week that was nifty. So right now, it's still limited to OneDrive Personal. This isn't in any of the Office 365 business or enterprise plans yet. But I think based on kind of what I've seen, it wouldn't surprise me if this came to OneDrive Commercial at one point in time. And again, this is another one of those preview ones where it's also still not available everywhere to every client and every OS. But it is the OneDrive Personal Vault for your storage. So OneDrive will now let you choose a folder that is going to be your personal vault. And this may be where you want to keep more sensitive information. As people start using the cloud more and more, naturally, documents that you want to save, that you want to have backed up, make their way up into the cloud. What this does is it lets you specify a folder that's your personal vault, and you can actually MFA secure that folder with MFA. So this lets you do fingerprint, face ID, PIN, code sent to you, email, SMS, all the typical MFA functionality that is there with OneDrive. Only now it is limited to a folder where you can put more of those more secure files, files that you want to protect a little bit more and not just have your have that extra layer of authentication or a second layer of authentication on top of just your normal OneDrive login. And then after you are done using it, this will actually time out, relock it after a certain amount of time. I don't know that they specified how long it takes to lock, but the nice thing is this works on the web. It works on mobile devices. It is going to work on the Windows client. Right now, the Mac OS client is the one that's left out. So if you have a personal vault and you're syncing it to your Mac desktop, Mac computer, it's not going to have the whole MFA stuff, or it may not even sync. We'll have to kind of see how that works as it comes out. But it really does give you a nice secure spot in OneDrive Personal to store information. And not only that, but on your mobile device where you have the whole, like your camera, where you can scan, take a picture. Maybe it's of your driver's license, of your social security card, of your various government IDs, tax information, insurance information, family documents. You can also like take pictures of all those and scan them right into this personal vault so that they are protected as soon as the picture is taken, that's stored, shoved off there out into OneDrive Personal. So kind of a nice feature. And again, I would love to see this come to Office 365 Enterprise too, where you can secure certain document libraries, certain folders in document libraries, all of that with MFA. Who knows? Maybe we'll see it at some point in time. But kind of a nice feature they rolled out to OneDrive Personal.
So they had some cool things that came out for, or that they at least announced for OneDrive for Business as well. It's not like you're left completely in the dust. There was a nice announcement in the June 2019 like update roll-up reminder thingamajigger that they do on the tech community, where they talked about the ability to do OneDrive for Business client sync with B2B accounts. So one of the limitations for a long time has been, especially when you look at like Dropbox or Google Drive, like if I share a folder with you in Dropbox, you can go and bring that into your Dropbox and then you can sync it locally and you can at least have that. But with OneDrive for Business, like if somebody shares a folder with you in a SharePoint site or, you know, just a random folder from the OneDrive, like it can be difficult to get at it and was nigh upon impossible to get at it, especially if it was external, like you're coming into somebody else's tenant and all of a sudden sync isn't there and sync's broken. But they're adding that as well. So that was pretty cool to see. It's going to be the ability to have you as a guest, like I could invite you into a folder in my OneDrive for Business or in my SharePoint tenancy, and then you'll actually be able to sync it through locally to your device through the latest OneDrive for Business sync clients once those kick up and get ready to go. So this is another one of those preview features. It's kind of insider only. You know, you're going to be waiting on certain builds. You can opt into just OneDrive, just the OneDrive client for insider builds if you want to, including on the Mac. So, you know, where your personal vault thing wasn't there, hey, you know, you could at least play around with this one on your Mac along the way if you really needed to. But I think this will be another one of those like nice end user driven experiences that just makes it a little bit better for everybody, right? It's one less thing to explain for why doesn't this tool do the same things that Google Drive and Box and Dropbox and everybody else have done for, you know, the past 5 years.
Exactly. And it looks like, I was just looking at the roadmap item, it's in the process of rolling out. So even if you upgrade your sync client, it doesn't look like your tenant may necessarily have this yet, or your client's tenant, because let's also face it, at this point in time, you're not only relying on your setup, but also your clients or your that B2B tenant that you're syncing from. There's a lot of different moving pieces to this one.
There's tons of stuff, right? It's not just the tenant side, it's also tenant configuration. Like, do both tenants have external sharing enabled? Are you on the right versions of the client on your desktop, be it Windows or Mac? How were you brought in as a guest account to those SharePoint sites? Do you have the right permissions on top of them? Lots of little moving pieces, but if the stars do align, it's, again, nifty functionality.
It'll work, yeah. So we'll post links to the documentation around all of the various steps and configuration things and requirements and known issues with it if you want to go check it out and see if you can give this a try.
Absolutely.
So should we wrap up our 4th of July episode with a bang? I don't have a bang. We can just wrap it up.
Sure. Yeah. On that note.
On that note. Insert audio clip of a bang. No, we don't want to scare our listeners as they're driving down the road. Yeah, well, go enjoy the rest of your day, Scott.
All right. Thanks, Ben.
Don't work too hard today. Friday between a holiday and a Saturday, so nobody's going to get much done today.
Try not to, but work always gets in the way.
All right. Yeah, I know. That pesky thing we need to keep doing. Well, we will talk to you later, Scott. Enjoy your weekend.
You too. Thanks, Ben.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.